They didn't tell us the dam would collapse. They didn't tell us to leave.
Lao residents continue to suffer effects from flooding. It's Monday, August 13th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're also on Facebook at VOA Asia. Coming up, water is also a problem for Rohingya refugees. Australia's population booms. An Indian-born CEO readies her exit from PepsiCo. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The catastrophic collapse of a dam in southern Laos has displaced thousands and left scores dead, with the toll expected to climb. The disaster is so severe it has prompted the Lao government to halt the approval of new dams until a thorough review of its existing projects is conducted. David Boyle reports from Atapu Province.
2 weeks after Laos' catastrophic dam collapse, rescue teams still somehow find survivors. More than 7,000 people were displaced when an auxiliary dam at the Zipin Zinam Noi hydropower complex collapsed, unleashing a 5 billion cubic metres surge of water. This air regiment has rescued more than 1,500 survivors, while ferrying supplies out to others cut off by the floodwaters. Increasingly, though, they are finding corpses. The official death toll is now up to 35, with nearly 100 still missing. The tales of those who survived are terrifying and deeply saddening. Samled Indavong whisked his wife and three kids to the relative safety of a boat right before an uprooted building crashed into his home.
We started to escape at midnight. I could not make it quickly enough to drop my grandparents onto the boat, and then I had to rush because the house was falling, so I lost my grandparents.
He carries this picture of his grandmother Chantai perched on his few remaining possessions. The body of his grandfather Pan has still not been recovered. Lieutenant Colonel Kamsuk Kamluangtep, who is heading up the Air Force's rescue operation, can't say how much longer it will take to find the remaining survivors or deceased.
I'm really upset about this, and I've been working from the beginning until now without stopping, and I'm very happy to be helping the people.
Out in the flood zone, some villagers are starting to return to inspect the damage. Most buildings here in Ban Mai, where the water surged up to 10 metres high, have been obliterated or heavily damaged, including the local pagoda. Those fortunate enough to still have a house are counting the cost of the damage. Nothing could have saved Samled Intavong's house, but he's angry he was not told just how serious the pending disaster was in advance.
At 4 o'clock, the village chief told us to prepare because they would release the dam. They didn't tell us the dam would collapse. They didn't tell us to leave.
The disaster has prompted the Lao government to finally reconsider its long-criticised oversight of scores of foreign-built hydropower dams it has approved. That marks a significant change, but is little consolation to those whose lives have been destroyed. David Boyle for VOA News in Atapu Province, Laos.
These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll currently find on voanews.com. Concern grows over fate of Chinese professor. Tens of thousands rally to kick U.S. base off Okinawa. Survivors recount horror of Lao Dam collapse. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. UN agencies, together with Bangladeshi authorities, are making a big push to quickly move thousands of Rohingya refugees at risk of landslides and floods to safer areas of Cox's Bazar. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The Cox's Bazar area has been coping with one of the heaviest monsoon seasons in years in Bangladesh, with the heaviest downpours coming at the end of July. UN refugee spokesman William Spindler says the torrential rains have tested the abilities of the many preparations and emergency measures which had been made to withstand the ravages of the expected storms. He says there was great concern that many of the fragile structures sheltering the large Rohingya refugee population would be swept away.
The refugee settlements have largely weathered the storms, proving the value of months of mitigation efforts. These activities go hand in hand with continuing intense efforts to ensure the massive refugee settlements can cope with the adverse weather. The scale is immense, as for example, Kutupalong refugee settlement shelters more than 600,000 refugees on 13 square kilometers, and it is today the largest such settlement in the world.
Most of the more than 700,000 Rohingya who have fled violence and persecution from Myanmar to Bangladesh since August are living in makeshift shelters in this squalid, overcrowded camp. Spindler says aid agencies have relocated nearly 24,000 refugees at high risk of landslides and floods. He says this is more than half of an estimated 41,000 Rohingya in greatest need of being moved to safer areas. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Australia's population has reached 25 million for the first time. That's according to official estimates. Over the past 3 years, Australia's population has grown by about 400,000 people a year, a rise fueled mostly by immigration. From Sydney, Phil Mercer tells us the population boom has prompted a debate about how many people Australia needs and the role of new settlers in sustaining economic growth.
Big or small, the debate about population in Australia is divisive. There is an argument that because of stagnant wages, congestion and unaffordable housing, immigration should be scaled back. The federal government, however, has said that new settlers boost the economy. Some experts also stress that the nation needs more skilled workers to support an ageing population. Population is a pertinent political issue. There have been calls for an official inquiry into population growth. An opposition Labour leader, Bill Shorten, says there's an out-of-control number of people coming to Australia on working visas. The Australian Bureau of Statistics population clock estimates Australia adds one new resident every 83 seconds, while a migrant arrives on average every 2 minutes, with the largest number coming from India and China. Sydney and Melbourne account for about two-fifths of the country's population. The nation has reached the 25 million person milestone almost a quarter of a century earlier than predicted in a prominent government report published in 2002.
All of those extra Australians will have to have a way to get around without damaging the environment. Australian scientists have test-driven two cars powered by a carbon-free fuel derived from ammonia. A team from the Australian government's research agency, the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organization, says the pioneering technology will allow highly flammable hydrogen to be safely transported in the form of ammonia and used as a widely available fuel. Phil Mercer drives back into our program with more.
Researchers have found a way to use a thin membrane to turn Australian-made hydrogen into ammonia. This could be shipped safely to markets in Asia as well as parts of Europe. At its destination, the liquid ammonia would then be converted back into hydrogen and used to power cars and buses, as well as for electricity generation and industrial processes. Dr. David Harris is the research director at Australia's government science agency, the CSIRO.
The special thing about the technology that we have is that it allows you to produce very pure hydrogen directly with a membrane system from ammonia.
The Australian team describes the membrane technology that separates hydrogen from other gases as a watershed moment for energy. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, a change of management at a huge soft drink company. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia, more than 156,000 people remain displaced after a magnitude 6.9 earthquake struck the Indonesian island of Lombok late Sunday, where the local economy is heavily dependent on tourism. It was one of three major quakes to rock the island in less than 2 weeks, producing more than 350 aftershocks. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, 62-year-old Indra Nooyi has recently announced she's stepping down in October as chief executive of giant soft drink multinational PepsiCo after 12 years at the helm. She will remain chairwoman until early next year. The announcement ends a storied career with PepsiCo that extends nearly 25 years for the Indian-born woman, a rare sight among leaders of Fortune 500 corporations. The company's revenues nearly doubled under her leadership as she moved it toward a more nutritious portfolio of drinks and snacks. IHS Global Insight chief economist Rajiv Biswas has followed Nooyi's career. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty she is an iconic figure in India, coming from a middle-class family in the southern city of Chennai, educated and entering the corporate world there before attaining a scholarship to attend the Yale School of Management in 1978. She joined PepsiCo in 1994 and attained her current post in 2006.
At a time when there's a lot of concerns in many countries about trying to develop women in leadership positions in all different sorts of areas, in government, in business, and other areas, she really has set a very high standard in terms of what needs to be done and what can be done. And I think also in terms of diversity, she's also iconic that, you know, an Indian who moved over to the U.S. and started pretty much at the bottom, worked all the way up to becoming the CEO and chairperson of PepsiCo. I think one of the great achievements that she's brought into industry in the U.S. and also globally is to really encourage more female talent to develop. But I think her approach was very much based on developing a pipeline of succession and not just having it by regulatory mandate, which is the government approach that some governments are now taking. But her approach is saying, well, we've really got to look at your whole talent pipeline. How do you develop the talent over time? And I think that's really a very important value added that she's bringing to that whole debate. Obviously, as a business leader, she transformed PepsiCo. She moved it much more towards a healthy mix of products. And so I think also from that point of view, her success as a business leader is also very important to recognize.
Well, this also must be a very proud moment for India, given her accomplishments.
There's quite a few Indian business leaders who have become prominent in the U.S. You know, there has been considerable examples of success, but she's at the very top of the list amongst highly respected business leaders. And an example for young, you know, talented Indians who think, well, I can start, you know, pretty much at the bottom of a, you know, multinational or other kind of corporate and work my way to the top. Now, of course, Indian business is also becoming much more globalized. There's a lot of Indian multinationals that are very large global players. So I think it's also important in the Indian context to encourage talented Indian women to be ambitious for the top roles. It's interesting to see her success in the U.S. I think it's also a very big positive for the U.S. that it's such an open multicultural society that someone can come from India, especially a woman, and work all the way up to the very top of one of the biggest U.S. multinationals. It's a fabulous example of, I think, the diversity and multiculturalism of the U.S., which actually elsewhere in the world is probably not really there in that many other countries.
Indra Nooyi told Bloomberg News she plans to advocate for more women to serve at the highest levels of corporations. Women today lead 24 out of the 500 companies listed on Wall Street's S&P 500 index. According to business channel CNBC, four of the top five U.S. defense companies will soon be led by women, including Northrop Grumman, Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, and Boeing Defense, Space, and Security. You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us online at iTunes and SoundCloud and, of course, on VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com. You'll also find us on the radio, like CCU Radio at National Chung Cheng University in Taipei, Taiwan. We thank everyone there who's tuned in today.
Among these great radio stations, we have great people who help us put on this program, like director Tracy Carter, engineer Zeynep Abdel-Rahman, our managing editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard as part of our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We wave to you and wish you a great day.